Right, I'm here with Polly Nash, the director of the film, what's it called? Outside the Law, Stories from Guantanamo, which is a spectacle production, and you are the director.
Along with Andy Worthington.
Along with Andy Worthington. The Andy Worthington.
The Andy Worthington of andyworthington.co.uk.
Yeah.
Slashed out by...
Yeah, if you'd like to just give us about a bit about the intentions of why you made the film.
Andy was in the middle of writing his book, which is called The Guantanamo Files, the story of the 774 detainees held in America's illegal prison.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's the full title. And I think I read it before it was published, and because I read it on sheets of A4 paper.
Uh-huh.
And it is an amazingly detailed, brilliantly researched book, which tells you the story of every single person that's been through Guantanamo Bay, but it also talks about the kind of total chaos and lawlessness that happened immediately after the invasion of Afghanistan.
Uh-huh.
And I think I'd been quite shocked. I hadn't really remembered that Afghanistan was invaded within a month of September the 11th happening.
Yes, it was pre-planned as well, wasn't it?
Very...
Yes.
You're not supposed to be giving your opinion. No,
well, I'm afraid I'm that sort of interviewer.
I was kind of taken aback by that, because even though I consider myself somebody who's fairly well read and knows what's going on, actually the book really brought a whole lot of information together, and it's a very, very clear timeline that takes you from really the history of Afghanistan, the history of America,
mm-hmm.
in meddling in Afghanistan, and then the book ends up telling the stories of everybody who's passed through Guantanamo Bay, with, I think, a few exceptions that then he's updated on his website. So Andy and I are old friends, and we discussed making a film that maybe was a sort of campaigning film, looking at three people who, British residents who were still in Guantanamo, that tried to tell the kind of broader picture of what America was dealing with, mm. how America was dealing with its terror suspects. The film ended up being called Outside the Law, Stories from Guantanamo, because in our first interview we did was with a lawyer called Tom Wilner, and he's an incredible character, because he's very much part of the... I get the feeling he's very much part of the Washington legal establishment. He's a litigation, a corporate litigation lawyer. He's very... he's not a human rights lawyer, but he got involved, and he described Guantanamo as being an American-run prison that was outside of the law. So that's where the title
right.
came from.
Uh-huh.
So, and both he and Clive Stafford-Smith talk about why the Americans, and it's very clear in the film, why the Americans chose to set up a prison. Well, it wasn't set up, it was already set up. But why they chose to use Guantanamo. Because if they'd chosen... obviously, if they put the prisoners in America, they would have had access to American law,
mm-hmm.
the American legal system. And but in Cuba, in effect, has sovereignty.
Really?
But America has complete jurisdiction over how the prison is run.
Right.
So it was a sort of offshore, sort of like an offshore prison.
Right. Outside the law. So we're just talking about the title of the film, Outside the Law, Stories from Guantanamo. And I kind of thought it was a reference also to the people that put those human beings in Guantanamo, George Bush et al.
Absolutely. I think that's what Tom was saying. He's saying that the Americans were placing themselves outside of the law.
Yeah.
It's for both of them,
so
really.
The international law, human rights law and all the rest
yeah.
of it. And even Geneva Conventions, all the laws.
All the laws.
Right. Okay. So let's clear that one up about the title. So we talked a bit about how the project came about. You read Andy Worthington's book.
Yeah.
And you knew Andy.
Yeah.
And you talked about making the film.
Yeah.
Can I just ask you a bit about the process, about how it all began to.
Well, that coincided with, we were talking about doing a film, and. In my experience, getting funding together is always a very long and
mm-hmm.
arduous process, and I saw that there was some funding going at the university. I teach part-time at the university, And there was some funding in the research department going there. So I put in an application for as much money as I thought they'd give me.
Mm-hmm.
And but they gave me half, which I was told was three times as much as anybody was expecting me to get. So
right.
I got £3,000.
To make the whole thing.
To make a 75-minute film.
Right.
And which meant that basically I had to do pretty much everything.
Uh-huh.
I was able to, when you get university research funding, you're not allowed to pay yourself. I was able to pay Andy
right.
Some money, and not very much, and I was able to pay Spectacle, the production company, a little bit towards their costs. Obviously, it doesn't really reflect what people did, but consequently, I didn't have any money to pay anybody, so I was doing things that I don't normally do, like graphic design.
Uh-huh.
And I'd never edited a 75-minute film before, so right. That was kind of an interesting thing to do. I've edited short films before, yeah. But nothing that scale. So it was good to do. And that's also why it took quite a long time to make.
How long did it take?
It took 2 years to make.
2 years.
A year after I started the film, pretty much. We went to meet Omar, and it was the. I think it was the most incredible day that we'd all had, really. Mark from Spectacle was shooting interviews, and Andy and I were doing the interviews. And I think it was the first time that Omar had really spoken that publicly since his release.
Right. This is Omar De Guise.
Omar De Guise, yes. And Omar was really, apologetic and saying, and he had these notebooks stacked next to him saying, I've written lots of notes down because I don't think I'll remember anything.
Uh-huh.
And he just started telling his whole story, and it was wow. Just, I didn't know where to put myself.
Uh-huh.
I sort of felt like I shouldn't be in the room listening to this story. And he was so open and so calm and just remembering so much stuff. It was it was an incredible night, actually. I think we all really, probably think it's one of the most memorable evenings.
Mm-hmm.
And he told the incredible stuff that just can't make it to the film, unfortunately, because I think we have about 6 hours worth of stuff with Omar.
Right.
And it's frustrating, when you're trying to put the final thing together, is that there's so much stuff that you can't put in, but I think a lot of that might form the basis of, I think Andy and Omar might do something together.
Uh-huh.
And that might go towards that. So the film took a really different direction once we had Omar involved. We were trying to, one of the intentions was not only to talk about the kind of conditions around people's capture and kidnapping and the chaos in Afghanistan and this kind of horrible, lawless situation going on in Afghanistan with people being sold for bounties, like the Wild West.
It's a
horrible situation. But I also felt it was very, very important that for years and years, all we ever saw in the media was these small photographs, sort of horrible, bad quality photographs of detainees with the heading, terror suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got no right to reply. And, then charges, spurious charges are dropped, but we don't ever see how charges against this person have been dropped. So they're these kind of these people we know nothing about apart from this sort of spurious terrorism charge,
which they can't answer in a court of law
because
they're outside the law.
So the idea of the film was to put a face on these people and to make people. Hopefully people see the film and start to think about these people in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And the accusation of terrorist is, so totally damning. It's very hard to get away from that. And I think that's even people that have been completely absolved of any kind of charges whatsoever are still finding that once they've got that name attached to them, it's very hard to shake it off. And I know that that's partly why the Guantanamo Justice Campaign has been set up. It's an organisation that's been set up by former detainees to help other former detainees kind of get on with their lives. So in some countries it's really, really difficult to carry on with your life, and families are sort of rejecting their
uh-huh.
loved ones because of this association with terror. So that's why the Guantanamo Justice Centre was sort of set up to help support former detainees. But anyway, so the film was to wanting to make people understand that these are human beings who have every single right to the full weight of the law,
mm-hmm.
And all the right, you know, all the rights and protections that the law is supposed to offer them. So, even though we interviewed Mozambique, it was very much about his friend Shakarama. It wasn't necessarily about his. About his own experience, because we're telling the story of Shakarama, who's still in Guantanamo, even though he's been cleared for release for 3 years. We wanted to get a very personal comments about him. So Omar knew him in prison and talks incredibly fondly about him and very powerfully about him. But Mozan was very, very close friends with him in London before they went to Afghanistan. So we wanted to get Mozan talking about why he was such a good friend, and why he's such a great personality and his family man, and how incredibly important family is to him. And so we were trying to get a kind of personal picture of these people.
Yeah, rather than the media terrorist. I mean, the way I see it is that they were being terrorised in these places, in Bagram.
But completely. I mean, another thing to make the film is that Mozan does this incredibly amazing, I mean, horrible description of his own capture. We used the word arrest to Clive Stafford Smith, and he very quickly snapped us down and said, you know, using the word arrest implies some kind of formal legal process.
Yeah.
And Mozan says, you know, you want to know about terror. Terror is being, having your door broken down in the middle of the night, being yanked out of bed, a bag put over your head, and a gun to your head, and shoved in the back of the car. You know, that's terror.
Yeah.
And I believe that's what happened to him.
Yeah, and the people that who did that aren't accountable at all, are they? We can't bring those people to account.
Well, in very small ways, I think that's what the Guantanamo Justice, I think what they're trying to do is try and hold some people to account. So that you should talk to Omar and Andy about the settlement, but you know that is in a small way some admission from the British authorities for accepting the fact that these people were tortured and abused with some collusion from the British.
Yeah.
So that goes some way towards owning up to that.
Yes.
It's not a big apology, but it is some.
I wouldn't expect a big apology from the British ruling class, really. I think they're quite arrogant, aren't they? And it's unfortunate that they can't be brought to account. I mean, I was looking at the student demos and, you know, oh my God, they've attacked Prince Charles and Camilla's car. And Cameron gets up in Parliament the next day and the full force of the law will be brought down on these people splashing paint on this car. And yet people who are carrying out torture, presumably murder and all the rest of it, are just totally unaccountable. Sorry, I'm going on with my own agenda.
You're absolutely right.
You wanted to say something about the intention, again, about to humanise these people rather than perception that they are terrorists or risks.
Well, I mean, people have said to me, but do you think these people did it? And in a way, it's neither here nor there whether people did it. If people commit terrorist acts, they're criminals,
yes.
And there's a very long established criminal proceedings for them to go through, and yet as far as I know, nobody's come out of Guantanamo with any serious charges whatsoever.
No, I've
known of anyone. But there is a system there for criminals.
Yeah,
and if they're prisoners of war, well, then we have, you know, we have the Geneva Conventions,
yeah.
and also. You know, battlefield tribunals. I mean, something we talk about, something that perhaps in the film is that we describe how there were no battlefield tribunals.
Right.
At all. So.
And that's part of the Geneva Convention.
Absolutely. And that's something the American military have always done until now.
Right.
They wanted to hold them, but the White House vetoed them.
Right.
So, there were no tribunals whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
So how possibly can anybody find out why somebody was anywhere if no one's asking anybody there and then? any questions.
So, this two-year process that you've been through, has it made you angrier or more determined to try and fight this kind of oppression? Or what sort of effect has it had on you as a human being?
I think it has. I don't know if angrier is the right word, but desperate. I think.
Yeah.
I think it's just desperate that these things can happen to people and they go completely unnoticed and totally no one's really that interested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the weight of the media is keeping us all in this state of fear that allows us to let these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think the whole thing's made me feel very, very desperate. It's also made me kind of think, what an incredible bunch of people like Mozambique, who can come out with this extraordinary kind of compassion almost in their captors. I mean, very, very, he's a really incredible campaigner and he's not stopped since he came out, but he's never angry.
Right.
It's just been incredible, really.
I'm probably more angry than he is, then.
I think we probably all are. Yeah. But he's written this amazing book about his experience with the Guantanamo, and he made friends with his guards.
I saw the cage prisoners tour that the what was his name, that American guard came around.
Chris Arendt.
Yeah, and that was incredibly moving. Those two, Mozambique and Chris Arendt, talking on stage about, you know, these two human beings in this totally bizarre, you know, surreal situation, and recognizing the humanity in each other, and being able to communicate and keeping that kind of compassionate channel open. You know.
Well, I think what Mozambique talks about is how people, the very young soldiers who were there to guard them in Guantanamo, and Omar talks about it as well, had been led to believe that these were monsters that were turning up, you know, and they'd been fed this kind of diet of utter nonsense that said these people weren't really human, these people are the people that are able to do the attacks on, you know, on the Twin Towers, these people are not human.
Yeah.
And Omar talks about how the guards had numbers on their wrists and they were saying, what are these numbers? And they were going, oh, these are for all the people that died in September the 11th, and that was some way to kind of keep this hatred alive.
Demonization of the enemy.
And then of course they meet after they've spent, you know, a few weeks with them, they realise that these people are not what they were led to believe.
Yeah.
And then Omar describes that after 6 months they're all taken away, and then a new lot who've been brainwashed comes in to,
So a big turnover of human beings, as it were. I mean, there's only so much, because that's an authoritarian system. You follow orders, and it's a classic ruling class system. But I guess they have, even having an authoritarian system where you were supposed to follow orders couldn't. You know, the human spirit can break through that, and I think that's very encouraging. That was what I got out of that cage prisoners tour, was that how the human spirit transcends this kind of hierarchical authoritarian system that's kind of imposed, you know.
But it degrades everybody, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There's this hideous. There was an FBI investigation, inquiry into the abuses in Guantanamo.
Right.
And the descriptions of things that were described by state employees, descriptions of things that were done to people are so humiliating, and you think the people that were doing these things, how utterly dehumanised they are too by being implicated in this whole thing. I mean, I'm not letting anybody off the hook for doing those things, but you just realise that the whole process is just, it's hideous for everybody and kind of humanity, really.
Yeah, and let's hope it ends very soon.
Very soon, yeah. Next.